Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann today. Today we are taking a look at the current state and the future of local journalism. Since 2012, Ohio has lost some 43% of its newspaper journalists. The state has lost 1,200 newspaper journalists over that period. The role of local journalism is critical to civic engagement and ensuring that local government functions properly. Its watchdog role is crucial to our democracy, but it faces an uncertain future with the decline of newspaper newsrooms around the state. Recently, Policy Matters Ohio, a think tank, left-leaning think tank, Policy Matters Ohio, published a report on the decline of journalism in Ohio. And joining us now is Caitlin Johnson. She's the director of communication at Policy Matters Ohio. Caitlin, thanks very much for joining us here on All Sides.
Thanks for having me.
First, let me ask, Policy Matters Ohio is a policy think tank. You look at issues like taxes, poverty, wages, climate change, to name a few things. Why did you do a study on journalism, particularly local journalism?
Well, we believe in the role of the public sector at Policy Matters Ohio. We think government can do a lot of great things to help people and to make our communities stronger. And like you mentioned before, newspapers and local news coverage makes government work even better. So we think we all have a stake in making sure that there's good, strong local news. And newspapers traditionally have been the backbone of local news.
Mm-hmm. So it's no different than you doing a study on various industries around Ohio that have been vital to the state's economic health and social health.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, we think it's just another part. It's another part of a well-functioning society, having a robust fourth estate. And, you know, coincidentally, of course, I'm a former reporter myself, and our research director is a former reporter. And so we... And our executive director worked on the college paper, you know, so we care about this.
Yeah.
And it's just important to us.
Great. Well, we appreciate the study. Any study that takes an objective look at journalism and where we stand right now, we as journalists certainly appreciate that. Let's get to what you found. You found over the past 6 years, the number of Ohio newspaper journalists has declined by 43%. We think we know what's going on, but what did your study find?
Well, right. Just like you said, it's a decline of 43% for newspaper journalists. And between 2004 and 2017, we have data showing that 59% of jobs in the newspaper industry as a whole, so that includes more than just journalists, are gone. So this is a big problem. And Ohio has lost 32% of its newspapers between 2004 and 2018. And it's not just the loss of newspapers, which is, of course, devastating, but it's also the loss of the news-gathering capacity at many newspapers that, you know, you're starting to see the rise of a ghost newspaper phenomenon. Newspapers that are getting kind of further and further removed from the communities that they're serving.
So let's dig into that a little bit, a ghost newspaper. So there are few reporters in the newsroom, but they're using more wire copy, more syndicated content, things like that?
Sure, exactly. That's one of the big phenomenons. And we cite heavily a report from the University of North Carolina, and that's they kind of coined the term news deserts. So mm-hmm. It's definitely worth checking out. They have a lot of great maps and such that you can look at and see how things have changed over time in the state. But they say that there has been no other state where mergers and consolidations have been happening at such a feverish pace as Ohio. And we're going to see more of that in the very near future with the impending merger between Gatehouse and Gannett, which is going to affect folks in Columbus quite a bit because the Columbus Dispatch is owned by Gatehouse. But that's a pretty common phenomenon we're seeing across the industry, the idea of consolidations, outsourcing the jobs to, you know, hubs located in other states. You're seeing more wire copy. You're seeing the loss of Washington bureaus. You're seeing the loss, you know, now with potentially the Gatehouse and Gannett merger, what's that going to mean for the Statehouse Bureau, mm-hmm. for all the papers that are owned by that by that new entity.
We're talking about the future of local journalism, the decline in the newspaper newsrooms. Caitlin Johnson, she's with Policy Matters Ohio, which has released a report about the decline of journalism, number of journalists in Ohio. If you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 614-292-8513. Of course, you can leave a comment on Facebook or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You mentioned how Ohio has seen this rapid decline in recent years. Why is that? I mean, I'm just guessing that, you know, we were fortunate in some ways for many decades to have a lot of family-owned newspapers. The Wolf's here in Columbus owned the Dispatch for 100 years. The Vindicator, which just closed down, and we'll talk about more of that later in the program, family-owned, just shut its doors. The Blade is still family-owned. Is that why Ohio is kind of... it's sort of delayed the corporate takeover of newspapers because families hung on for so long?
Well, I think what we're seeing in Ohio is pretty similar to what we're seeing all over the place, and perhaps the family ownership has something to do with it. But we found in our research that there are two main reasons that newspapers are struggling so much. One is because of the rise of digital media and online. And it's not bad in and of itself that news is increasingly provided online. You could argue, and it is true, that some communities, rural communities, low-income communities, communities of color, tend to have less access to broadband or the internet. So having news exclusively online can be problematic for them unless we can find a way to make investments to make sure that those communities get that broadband and infrastructure. But the idea, you know, if the news is, as long as we have the news, the medium that it comes in is not as important. But the issue is that newspapers haven't exactly figured out a way to make money off of it, as we all know. And ad revenue is one of the most important parts of the newspaper business model. So you're having entities like Facebook and Google. Now, those are the places that are sucking up the lion's share of digital ad revenue. And I always find it kind of ironic because on my Facebook page, at least, everyone's sharing newspaper stories. Mm-hmm. Or a lot of people are sharing false, fake news, yeah, so to speak. But at least on my page, I think most people are sharing good newspaper stories. And Facebook is making a ton of money off of people sharing that content, but newspapers haven't really figured out how to monetize that. So, and especially pronounced in local markets, Facebook and Google suck up even more of the digital ad revenue in smaller local markets, which explains the pressure that can be put on papers like The Vindicator and other smaller papers like that. So there's that aspect, not being able to figure out how to deal with the digital ad revenue question.
Well, the way to do that is to put all of your content behind a paywall. And newspapers have struggled with that really since the dawn of the web. Newspapers were very reluctant to put their content behind a paywall because they saw it as a marketing tool for the newspaper. Then they decide, okay, now we're going to charge something. And some newspapers charged for a while and then took the fees away. Then they put the fees back. And one way to do that is when you click on that Facebook post that has a story from, say, the Columbus Dispatch or Cincinnati Inquirer or Dayton Daily News, that you have to be a subscriber to read it. That's something that is hard to do.
Well, that's one way to try to make more money off of the rise of digital. We also suggest in our report that newspapers and local news in general, that's a public good, mm-hmm, which means you need public policy to intervene and support it. And the reason we call it a public good is because even if you don't necessarily go out and buy a newspaper, you are benefiting from the fact that the newspaper exists in your city. You're benefiting from the fact that you have newspaper reporters attending city council meetings or the school board. Like, that is making your community stronger and making your government work better. So that is why it deserves a public policy response. So paywall is something that newspapers can do, but we think there needs to be steps taken on a larger, broader level,
Let's get into that. You advocate tax dollars go to support local journalism. In your report, you call for lawmakers to increase support for public broadcasting by $5 million a year. Now, full disclosure, WOSU likely would benefit from that. We are a member of the Ohio Public Radio Consortium of Stations. We get some money from the state. Is that the proper use of tax dollars to support public radio more than it does already. Journalism more than it does already.
I absolutely think so. I think we've been supporting journalism since the founding of the Republic. There were some fees associated with postage in the early days to support journalism. This is something that the people that founded our government recognized was important to make things work better. And getting back to the Facebook and Google issue,
we call for a national tax on those platforms to subsidize or to set up an endowment for local journalism.
That is one of the proposals that are being put forth by a lot of experts and also some presidential candidates. And we think that makes a lot of sense to look for, to look into. Facebook and Google are benefiting greatly from this. And we also know that there are some bad things that can come along with that, some fake news, some things that are destructive for our democracy. So with Facebook and Google doing so great, it seems like they should be doing a little bit more to give back.
Is there, I mean, the BBC in the UK is a top-notch news organization. They actually tax radios and televisions on a yearly basis. So there is precedence for government support of journalism. And New Jersey recently has used some of its proceeds from the TV spectrum auction, you know, when the cell phone companies wanted part of the TV frequency band, that they used some of that money to support local journalism.
Absolutely. And we have been talking with some folks in New Jersey who helped make that happen. And we don't know if that model exactly will be replicable in Ohio, but there needs to be something done. I think folks from all political perspectives can agree that the news media plays a really important role in a functioning society. And we need to figure out ways to support it. Our communities are going to suffer without local news. And we, in our paper, we include a lot of citations of, you know, peer-reviewed studies that show newspapers, when they close down, pollution can go up. When they close down, government debt can go up. When they close down, voter participation goes down. So it benefits us in so many ways, and we need to stop thinking of it as just something that we should throw our hands up and say, let the market take care of it. We need to do something as a community, as a society, together to try to find a way to support it.
You know, Alaska Public Radio relies a lot on taxpayer funding for its service. They have stations, you know, the state is huge, it's remote areas, they're on islands, it's very difficult to make it if you're an Alaskan public radio station. The legislature in Alaska just whacked its funding, cut it, eliminated it. So these stations are really in trouble. The danger of relying on tax dollars is that, you know, legislatures change, governors change, presidents change. Is that a viable long-term model for the health of local journalism?
Well, I'd say the danger of relying on the private market also has proved very precarious as well. Mm-hmm. When business models change, when the internet comes into being, when phones come, I think that there needs to be an all of the above approach. I think there is a role, as we have established. Generally, even the economists will tell you governments take a role in something when it benefits society, when there is a public good, when there are positive externalities associated with it, and there are many, many, many positive benefits to having a robust news media, and so that's why it demands a public sector response.
So you look at this, not much different than what just happened with the energy bill that passed the legislature. Two nuclear power plants up in northern Ohio, struggling. The lawmakers deem them vital to the energy grid, the jobs vital to the state's economy. Granted, it's ratepayers who are paying this, but there was some government intervention there, which basically amounted to a tax on ratepayers to support that industry. So you see newspapers along those lines.
I mean, I have a lot of thoughts about HB6, and I am not so
story.
Sure I would put newspapers and those nuclear power plants, which, you know, you can have a lot of different thoughts about that, but I am not sure that's an apples-to-apples comparison.
Well, I guess
no.
My point is that it's not unprecedented for government to intervene in a struggling private industry.
Oh, Absolutely not. We've seen it many times with the, you know, auto industry, with the banks. We've seen it a lot of times, and it tends to be, frankly, government tends to intervene when the industries themselves are incredibly powerful and lobby aggressively and make many campaign contributions. You tend to see the government intervening or policymakers intervening in that case. Yeah. And we think that there should be intervention, not just when well-heeled interests are concerned, but also when everyday people mm-hmm. would stand to benefit.
And newspapers aren't going to make a whole lot of campaign contributions, at least the frontline folks anyway. So anyway, it's interesting proposal, something I'm sure that'll get talked about a lot in the coming years. Caitlin Johnson, Director of Communications for Policy Matters Ohio. They released a report on the decline of journalism, newspaper journalists in Ohio. It's worth the read. It's an interesting look at the state of local journalism in Ohio and some unique proposals to try to fix it. Caitlin Johnson, thanks very much for joining us here on All Sides.
Beyond.
We'll return and we'll look at the Youngstown Vindicator, which shut down last week. We'll look at what happened there and also the future of newspaper journalism in Ohio when All Sides continues here on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann today. We're talking about the state of local journalism, the loss of jobs in the newspaper industry, what lies ahead for local journalism in Ohio. Last week, Youngstown's local newspaper shut its doors. The Vindicator served that community for 150 years, but the family that owned it said it was experiencing financial struggles. It lost money for decades and finally could afford no longer to provide that community with a local newspaper. The loss of a newspaper is not necessarily a new thing here in Ohio. Since 2012, Ohio has lost more than 43% of its newspaper journalists. With us is Todd Franco. He is the former editor at The Vindicator. Todd, welcome to All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
Mike, thank you for having me today. I appreciate the opportunity.
Todd, first, our sympathies to you and your staff. Has to have been a very difficult time, obviously, for you and the city of Youngstown.
You know, the last night, Friday night, was kind of a surreal scene. If you would have turned down the volume on our newsroom, you would have just watched. You would have thought it was any big news event, election night, big storms, whatever it might be, president coming to town. The buzz, the connection, the energy, and it was just kind of weird that it was our own story that we were writing, yeah. And it was our last story. So quite amazing night.
You never want to you never want to report on yourselves, and you certainly never want to report on yourselves going out of business.
I think when you watch the folks, it was true. It was a heroic in a professional sense in terms of how they pulled through, and just an amazing week, an amazing night. So, but tough.
For how long have you worked at the Vindicator? Had you worked at the Vindicator?
2007.
Wow. So you've been there a few years then. Tell us about the Vindicator's history. You had a rich history of investigative journalism. You annoyed a few politicians over the years, sent a few of them to prison. It has a rich history.
Watchdog work has been kind of a staple of the Vindy going back decades. The gentleman who named it came to Youngstown because he was not thrilled with the political activities in another city, and he came here and he felt vindicated that people finally saw things as he did, and that's why he named the paper The Vindicator, and that kind of launched us. And decade after decade, you know, we fought hard, the family fought hard against the KKK, you know, back in the day.
Yep.
And it just continued through the crazy political moments. Obviously any newspaper is not completely loved in its community and probably never should be. So we definitely had our detractors, but I think at the end of the day, and that's what we heard, you know, since the announcement June 30th, is that our lives are still better with you, even though we don't always agree with you. And that's been the sentiment. So,
bottom line, why did it shut down?
But I mean, I think the same thing that, that you were all just talking about just before. It's a crushing economy. The you know, right now, digitally speaking, 75 cents of every dollar on the digital spend goes to three companies, and I think that that siphoned all the cash out of print for the most part. I think the stats say that we were a $99 billion industry in '99, and I think in 2017 we were down to. Down to $14 billion. Mm-hmm. So I think when that kind of money gets siphoned out, you see the stats that that have been reported in terms of what 43% of our newspaper jobs have been gone in the last 10 years or so.
Yeah, did the this went from publishing daily to no paper. Did the family look at other alternatives? Did it look at publishing a few days of the week, maybe Sunday only? Did it look at just going online? And why didn't they go that route?
Correct. So we had we've been looking at cuts for about 8 months. We all put together a plan A of cuts, a plan B of cuts, and a holy cow, this is the end of days plan C. And every department submitted them. And I'm not sure all the evaluation that went on with the ownership group and their advisors. But at the end of the day, the amount of cuts that would have had to have had happened would still have just rendered us. We were just stunned as well. I mean, so when we walked in, I've been waiting to get laid off. And as we've been seeing these numbers, I'm looking at the Policy Matters story from your previous guest. We know the numbers, we know the industry, and I've been waiting to get laid off for 2 or 3 years. And so when we walked into that meeting that day, I was fully expecting the top 10, 12, 15 salaries are getting their severance notices, and here's the new ownership, and it's going to be Gatehouse, et cetera. So we never saw closure coming. So it was a decision kept really close to the ownership's chest and with their advisors. And like I said, there's a lot of cuts laid out there. We've been talking about them for years, but definitely hardcore. And just the family decided that all the cuts they could make still weren't enough to keep the thing going.
Todd Franco, he's the editor, former editor of the Youngstown Vindicator, which shut down last week. We're talking about the state of local journalism in Ohio. Did the family said it tried to find a buyer? Did it wait too long to try to find a buyer, like Gatehouse or another company around the country?
So, as told us, and I think the story's been well shared. I mean, they put the paper for sale 18 months ago and went with the traditional brokers in the industry. There's essentially two companies that handle all the brokerage of newspapers, and they took the right steps. I think that the one reality that I think buyers encounter with us is that because of the Youngstown legacy going back to the 40s, 50s, and 60s, it was a booming town before the steel collapse of 77. So there's a lot of media, you know, I could drive 20 minutes in either direction and be in the newspaper offices of four different newspapers. So we were the fifth. There's five daily newspapers, counting us, 20 miles from my office in each direction. You have Warren, you have Sharon, Pennsylvania, you have Newcastle, Pennsylvania, you have Salem, and all of those are in our coverage area in terms of high school sports. There's a lot of newspapers. There's three TV stations, so to speak. There's several weekly and monthly specialty publications, business and entertainment. So it's an over-mediated market.
Yep, that was Yeah, go ahead.
Well, then I think when you add that to the economics of our industry, you know, we had some pension issues and stuff. So again, a lot of the things we weren't privy to.
Yeah.
But we do know there's a lot of media pulling at a small media spend going on in our area.
Yeah. One last question, and we'll bring another voice to the conversation, Mike. You know, did the newspaper fail, or I don't want to say the city failed the newspaper, but look at these numbers here. 40 years ago, Youngstown's population was 115,000 people. Now it's about half that, 65,000.
Correct.
Did the city just erode around you?
Part of that, sure. No, that definitely did happen, and the readership trends that everyone talks about in terms of 30-somethings and 40-somethings, you know, we definitely had that going on as well. But it is a smaller market, and that pulled away at the ad dollars. Oddly, our readership was fine if you would merge the print with the online. When I When I arrived in 2007, we were 60,000 daily and about 20,000 uniques online, eyeballs. And then by the time we closed, we were down to 30,000 in print, but we were up to 48,000 uniques online. So we still had a robust audience, you know, relatively speaking. It's not like it all went down to 20,000 completely with our digital audience.
Yeah.
They're still pretty sizable. So, but obviously, money at the end of the day is what allows us to do our work. And it just wasn't the money from advertisements.
Let's bring another conversation into another voice into this conversation. David Mindich, he's an author, media historian, and chair of the journalism department at Temple University. David, welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Thank you for having me.
David, you've been listening to this conversation. How unique is this story that the Youngstown Vindicator is experiencing?
Well, unfortunately, it's not unique, right? Nationwide, 47% decline in newspaper jobs in the last 10 years. Overall, about a 25% decline in all newsrooms. So newspapers have fared worse nationwide than other news organizations. It's a real shame. I mean, without newspapers, without people to hold leaders accountable and introduce various parts of society to one another and help us deliberate on political issues, we don't have a vibrant democracy. So it's a serious issue.
Youngstown becomes, I believe, the largest city now without a daily newspaper.
Yes, that's what I've heard. It's awful. Newspapers play such an important role. There's a connection between how civically engaged, I just was listening to your conversation, how civically engaged a community is, a correlation between that and news consumption. And we're seeing over the last 30, 40 years declines in civic engagement, political affiliation, other factors that also, in addition to the economics that were mentioned, can lead to decline in someone consuming a newspaper.
David Mindich, media historian with and chair of the journalism department at Temple University. You're not privy to all of the details of the Youngstown Vindicator, but you've looked at a lot of these similar stories. Is there anything newspapers could have done 10 years ago, 15 years ago, even to avoid this?
You know, I think newspapers can do a lot more, and I think that we as a society can do a lot more, looking back and looking forward. Even one of the questions that we can ask, which is slightly different than the one you're asking, is like, do we need newspapers to be part of our communities and democracy? And the answer is yes. The recent Policy Matters report suggested a bunch of different ways that we can get around this. One is that we can have some kind of a tax that revenue is poured into local newspapers from states, for example, which brings up a whole bunch of other issues that we'd have to grapple with. But like in Britain, for example, there's a television tax that funds the BBC and public media. There are things that we can do to push that. We can also push Facebook, even though they're unwilling to share revenue. We can certainly push Facebook to be less user-driven and more, I mean, that's their raison d'etre, but we can push them to be less user-driven and more giving up more of their real estate on their page to mainstream newspapers. And it's something that we can push either through regulation or through pressure. We used to have these things called newsstands, you walk around any big city and you could buy a physical newspaper. Now Facebook and Twitter have become the virtual newsstands, and maybe we should insist that more quality newspapers through the algorithms get put more prominently on Facebook's page.
Todd Franco, former editor at The Vindicator. Can I ask you, did The Vindicator charge for access to its website? Was it a subscription base for the digital use before it shut down?
No, it was completely wide open. I think if you study our industry, you'll see that a lot of newspapers were torn which way to go.
Yeah.
In terms of put the paywall up and there's less clicks, and therefore the clicks then cut into your ad opportunities or keep the paywall down and have more clicks. So our choice was to go with no paywall and have more clicks. And, you know, we became the top website in the region. Mm-hmm. There's no stronger website for us. So one thing that, that David talked about with Facebook, I actually think that in addition to making sure there's more prominence with the publishing industry in the Facebook vehicle, I think it's also making sure that's monetized. If we Facebook, I think with the clicks, a lot of our clicks, people would read, you know, by the time a Vindicator post appeared on Facebook with a couple other bits, it was a 90-word story about the size of a good radio broadcast news item. So a lot of folks just kind of glanced at their Facebook feed and moved on. And I think the privilege, the ability to have that story out there could have been monetized better in the early stages, but that, you know, that horse left the barn and there was never any opportunity. But I think so much news is available just through the Facebook feed that having publishers like us monetize it would have been one option to consider.
Yeah, I mean, that's the argument early on in the early days of Facebook, social media in general, was a way to push out your content, get more eyeballs to read it, and hope that they would turn them into subscribers or get them to visit your website, which would drive digital revenue. But it's helped a little, I'm sure, but it hasn't paid off as much as they hoped.
Oh, yeah, no, our eyeballs were awesome with Facebook. It definitely helped. I think what no one saw in that approach was the amount of advertising dollars that would not stay with that local publishing group, but instead go to the original conduit to those eyeballs, which is Facebook. So, yeah. So the eyeballs came to us for sure, and we were grateful for them. But the trade-off was we lost, you know, our ad opportunities because so many went to Facebook.
Media historian David Mindich, before we let you go, you know, I always say that, you know, storytelling has existed forever since there were, you know, cave people around campfires. We had the town crier who eventually got laid off. We had pamphlets, which were replaced by newspapers. Now we're going through this other transition. My attitude is we'll figure it out. Will we figure it out this time, David Mindich?
Yes, I think so. I mean, well, I spent the last 20 years of my life before I moved to Temple in Vermont. And 20 years ago, when I first arrived in Vermont, there were about 16 to 18 Statehouse reporters. Now, 20 years later, there are still 16 to 18 Statehouse reporters because of digital native news organization called VT Digger, which is now one of the largest newsrooms in the state. An alternative weekly has cropped up, Vermont Public Radio. So even though the largest daily in the state, which is the Burlington Free Press, has lost half of its newsroom staff, others have picked up the slack. So I know that Vermont is not the nation, but that's a model that perhaps could emerge. And, you know, newspaper business has reinvented itself a number of times. Just really quickly, in the 1830s, newspapers had abandoned the party patronage model in favor of appealing to the public and selling ads. And that then led to 150 years of amazing profits. So I really believe that this is an ideal time to innovate. We're not going to see a lot of papers like The Vindicator come back, but we'll see something else come back. Mm-hmm. And it can be a really exciting time. The next 10 years can be really exciting.
David Mindich, author, media historian, chair of the journalism department at Temple University. Thanks for joining us on All Sides with Ann Fisher.
Thank you very much.
We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll continue our look at the future of local journalism, what it's going to take to maintain the reporting core that we need to keep our society vibrant when All Sides continues here on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann today. We're talking about the future of local journalism, in particular the future of newspaper journalism here in Ohio and around the country. Of course, the sad news last week, the Youngstown Vindicator closed its doors after 150 years. Its owners say it had lost money. The newspaper had lost money 20 out of the past 23 years, I believe. Still with us is Todd Franco, the former editor at the Vindicator. And joining us in this conversation right now is Rick Edmonds. He is the media business analyst for the Poynter Institute. Rick Edmonds, thank you for joining us here on All Sides with Ann Fisher.
Yeah, good to be with you, Mike.
The big news in Ohio, other than the Vindicator shutting down, is that Gatehouse Media, which owns several newspapers here in Ohio, including the Columbus Dispatch here in Central Ohio, is buying Gannett, merging with Gannett, which owns the Cincinnati Inquirer here in Ohio. They're paying, I don't know what they're paying, it's over $1 billion, correct? So somebody thinks you can make money in newspapers.
Yes, and I think they feel as though the Columbus Dispatch is a case in point. They have been relatively successful in buying a lot of newspapers, running them their way, and doing some things in a centralized manner. And they're saying they think they can get savings of around $300 million per year as they operate Gannett. That clearly will involve some consolidation and cutting, I think, mostly in business functions, but it's fairly likely to get to the newsroom too.
Are you optimistic that they can? I mean, this is a huge merger. Gatehouse already was the largest owner of newspapers in the country,
right?
Makes them even bigger. Can they save the newspaper industry?
Well, they don't have to do it all by themselves, but I do think that what we're seeing overall is not so much the death of the industry. The Vindicator, of course, an exception of a paper that closed, but a lot of papers that are still in business are a lot smaller than they used to be and are, in my view, giving it their best shot to still do good work and sort of focus on investigations, accountability, and what readers in a particular community want. But you're certainly right. It remains to be seen, and these next several years are critical.
Todd Franco, from the formerly of the Vindicator, I assume at this point you would have welcomed a Gatehouse purchase of your newspaper rather than having it close its doors completely, even though a lot of journalists don't like to see these corporate mergers.
Yeah, correct. I think the community's worked hard to be a loyal part of the Vindicator history, and they've welcomed it into their homes, and keeping it going in some fashion would have been great. They did come up with a unique so the Ogden Company did step in to keep the Vindicator name going and to keep daily news. I've not had any stop in my daily delivery service. Right when our last paper arrived on Saturday, Sunday morning, there was the new Vindicator from the folks at Ogden, and they're working hard to service the community. So
how is that? So it arrives on your doorstep or in your driveway, but how is the content different? What's in the newspaper?
I mean, it's lighter. I mean, I think it's also early to give them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Some of our staffers are heading over there. I think they started yesterday and today. So give them a month. But that said, they were always the smaller of the two papers. You know, we were about triple their size, double their size, depending on how you measure it.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a lesser product just because of that structure. But they're going to give it a shot, and I applaud them for trying to step in and serve the community. So.
Rick Edmonds from the Poynter Institute. Is this similar to what happened, you know, decades ago? I mean, you look at all the daily newspapers that were in New York City. I don't know what they were. There were, you know, a dozen of them, I think, or eight or nine of them at least. And Columbus had two daily newspapers for a long time. And there was consolidation there. Is that what's happening in cities like Youngstown?
Well, I think it's a little bit different. But, I mean, you're certainly right. That consolidation took place over a very long period, probably decades, going back to the 60s and 70s. And as you probably know, Gannett was the number one consolidator, buying papers that were independent, that family or corporate group didn't want to run anymore. You know, I think now consolidation makes sense. I think we'll see more of it. We do have a fair number of family owners, like those of the Vindicator, who are perhaps looking to sell and exit the business. It's a very tough business, and it's especially tough in terms of doing technology, content management systems, just what you need to get a paper out and a digital edition out when you're just one by yourself. So that's an advantage for the Gannets and Gatehouses of the world.
Let's bring in some callers here to our conversation. They've been waiting for patiently for a little while. Mort from Westerville, you're on 89.7 NPR News. Go ahead, Mort.
Yes. I agree that the decline of newspaper journalism is potentially bad news for American democracy, and that history teaches us that when dictators come on the scene, the first thing they do is abolish the newspapers or take over the news media.
Okay. Thanks, Mort. Thanks for that call. Let's pick up on that. I mean, Donald Trump has been a critic of newspapers, harsh critic, calling him the enemy of the people, obviously hyperbole there. But still, has Donald Trump, Todd Franco, has Donald Trump been good or bad for newspapers?
I think ultimately he's been tough on media, unfairly tough. I think it's not just newspapers. He likes to find people they can beat up on. And the larger the target, and the more opportunity to get more people involved in beating up on a certain target, whether it's Hillary or whoever. So media has been a target, and he's worked it well. I mean, completely unfair, completely dangerous to society, but he's worked it like a magician.
Rick Edmonds, but as Donald Trump berates the media, New York Times, Washington Post, seeing great success.
Well, exactly, and perversely, he's been very good for their subscriptions, especially digital sales. They have both grown tremendously over the period that he's been in office. But I would also agree that actually even that is sort of a two-edged sword, because I think some people have become so absorbed in national news, they're less interested in what their local paper has to offer. And I mean, I do think that people who have some doubts or some trust issues anyways with the media, that's just inflamed by his constant attacks.
So the rhetoric does take a toll at some point. Go ahead, Todd.
It was interesting watching Our Life over the last couple of years. Our editorial cartoons, our editorial pieces that picked on Obama for certain things and highlighted, you know, typical editorial cartoons. For 8 years, you know, we got our normal flow. In the 2 years of Trump, the same kind of routine of cartoons and opinions, and the vocal nature of his base has been such that you would have thought that we've never done this before. And we try and remind folks, and we would send them examples.
Yeah.
We ran the same kind of cartoon on Barack Obama, and nobody complained. But here we are doing it. You think we've never done it before?
Short memories we have.
Correct.
Well, let's take another call from Charlotte. Go ahead, Charlotte. You're on 89.7 NPR News.
Yeah. Good morning. Thanks for taking the call. Why should I pay for a subscription in this era when I can go to the public library, go on the internet, look up on the internet, Die Deutsche Zeitung, London Times, New York Times, whatever, around the world, and I already am paying for those subscriptions.
All right, let's get an answer to that. Rick Edmonds.
Yeah, a fair number of people feel the way you do, that their news needs are pretty well satisfied by what's available for free. The New York Times, I don't think, is free for any sustained period of time, but your point remains. And if your biggest interest is national news, you know, that's great resources there. And also, I think, I don't know if you feel this way, but some people have a relatively more limited and targeted interest in local news. You know, they want to know the weather, they want to know their traffic jams, and that's satisfied pretty well by TV. So, earning the interest and ultimately some subscription from people like you is one of the big challenges newspapers face.
And Todd Franco, the value is, yeah, you provide the day-to-day grind of the news, you know, what's happening, what the weather forecast is, what the high school football team did last night, but it's the investigative reporting that props up every month, every 6 months, when something really big happens, where you're providing a watchdog role. That's what really pays off as far as local journalism is concerned.
And I think to your caller's point, I think that's the issue, is that all those titles that she listed off, let's say that she lives in Zanesville or in Reynoldsburg, none of those titles are worried about what's going on with spending in Reynoldsburg. None of them are about, here in town, you know, we lost a supermarket for 6 weeks due to flooding from the June rains. The flooding issue in the township of Boardman has gone unaddressed for years. New York Times, if you live in Boardman, and it's the largest township in the state of Ohio, nobody is holding the township officials' feet to the fire in terms of why does this flooding persist and what measures. And so after, you know, it happened in June, we marched there and made it a 4-week effort to stay on the flooding issues. The Sparkle Market finally just reopened after 6 weeks of renovations due to all the mold. And no one's, the local journalism is the only group that's going to do that. And one of the things, President Tressel now, familiar name,
that's
the Columbus
right.
Market,
yep.
As a coach.
Youngstown State president, yep.
Correct. President Youngstown State doing a fantastic job. He was part of my conversation group in the first 5 days after this happened. And he hit it spot on. I mean, obviously, coach or president, it's kind of tough to adjust. President's been in the crosshairs of some tough media coverage during his football days. And he said, you know, football scores will get figured out, obituaries will get figured out, but it's that watchdog role that's really going to affect the community. And that came from Coach Tressel, President Tressel.
Yes, Rick Edmonds from the Poynter Institute. So in the last few minutes we have here, we heard about Vermont and what's going on up there and how their number of State House reporters really has not declined because other sources, other innovative sources have come forward. How optimistic should we be that the rest of the country will do something similar?
Well, that's definitely a bright spot, and there's an organization of nonprofit local sites that I think has 180 members now. Second organization, it admits some that are for profit too, and it has a number of members. Yeah, and Vermont's a good example. And let's not forget your own outlet, Public Radio, already is increasing its local coverage, and I think has a lot more potential to pick up some of the slack. So, you know, it may be, and I pardon the sort of buzzword, it may be that we should be looking at a news and information ecosystem mm-hmm. In a given community as opposed to just saying, here's how the newspaper is shrinking.
Correct. Yeah. I'm actually privileged to join a new group called Report for America. And it's one of the national trendsetters in trying to, just as Rick said, not necessarily worry about newspapers, but worry about journalism and trying to partner with the nonprofit community to get journalism feet on the ground in cities that are losing it. So there's efforts out there like the Vermont example, and the Texas Tribune model is probably one that people should take a look at. I've been a fan of that for several years, and they're expanding that nationally under the umbrella of the American Journalism Project.
Texas Tribune is a partnership of several Texas public radio stations in Dallas, San Antonio, Houston, and Austin, Texas,
yes,
as well. They do a daily talk show and a daily newscast and consolidate on digital news. And that National Public Radio, NPR, is trying to take that nationally as well. But it's, you know, we're not rolling in dough either, but
got to keep doing those fun drives.
Starting tomorrow, call now. Anyway, real quick, does news have to be nonprofit? Rick Edmonds from Poynter.
Some people think so. I don't. I think there's a role both for the for-profit sector and the nonprofit. And you know, we haven't really talked about there are some either individual investors or groups of investors who've locally bought up papers and tried to run them in a way that serves the community with a modest profit margin. So I think that's part of the picture for finding a way out of this.
Todd Franco, former editor of The Vindicator, what's next for you?
Report for America.
Okay.
I try and join the national bandwagon of nonprofit pursuits and putting feet on the ground. So I start September 16th. They're starting from Boston and New York, and they're tied tight to the Texas Tribune folks and eager to give them a shot.
That's a great outfit, and it started a little bit slow, but it's picking up steam now, and I'm delighted, Todd, that you're going to be a part of that.
All right. Rick Edmonds.
And
Go ahead, Todd.
I'd throw the beer with you today. You've been an expert in this business for so long, and I've been reading you for years. So thanks for all you've done for us.
Thank you.
Rick Edmonds, media business analyst for the Poynter Institute. Also, Todd Franco, former editor for the Youngstown Vindicator. Thanks for joining us on All Sides. Local journalism will survive. It just will look a little differently than it has the past 100 years. Sitting in for Ann Fisher, I'm Mike Thompson on All Sides with Ann Fisher here on 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station.